This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Since starting her career in 1979, comedian Paula Poundstone has performed thousands of shows, been recognized as one of Comedy Central's 100 greatest stand-ups of all time, and been inducted into the Comedy Hall of Fame. And public radio listeners know her as a frequent guest on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula Poundstone is coming to Cincinnati to perform at the Taft Theater on September 18th, and she joins me this afternoon to talk about her career in comedy. Paula, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
I'm trying to figure out if comedians are born or made. So what were you like as a child? Were you the kid who was always telling jokes in school?
I have always enjoyed the sound of laughter. So, I mean, whether or not anyone else thought of me as amusing is, you know, the jury's out on that. I think there would, if one were to poll the kids I went to school with, there would be a wide variety of answers on that topic. But I love the sound of laughter and certainly enjoy things that I think are funny myself. It's the coolest part of our brain.
It is.
The idea that, you know, it makes sense that we learned to, you know, like if you touch a hot thing, it burns. Okay, great. That all those kinds of things make sense. But who the heck came up with the sense of humor thing? That is just great.
So you're about endorphin production, aren't you?
I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin production industry. I don't know if we are the only animal that gets that, but certainly we're one of the lucky few, and it's pretty nice. I mean, it's such a great coping mechanism for the for the otherwise slog of real life.
When did you first realize that stand-up comedy was something that you wanted to do?
Really, really early. I mean, I didn't know stand-up per se when I was very young, because at that time, you can only find stand-up comedy like on television. Generally speaking, it would be on like a late-night show, you know, the Tonight Show or something. And my parents really didn't enjoy my company well enough to have me up that late as a general rule. I was more familiar with comic actresses when I was younger, you know, Maritella Moore and Gilda Radner and Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball and Lily Tomlin. I didn't really get this sort of stand-up thing until, you know, till closer to adulthood, I think. And then I was just lucky enough to live in Boston in 1979 when a burgeoning stand-up comedy community had begun, and there were open mic nights, and that's the that's the training ground for a stand-up comic. It's not like any other art form in that you can't really do it in your house and get good at it and then present it publicly. The whole thing is the public presentation.
Yeah, you have to get used to the feedback you're getting from the audience, don't you?
Exactly. You have to kind of ride it like a wave. And so, there's no simulation for that. And therefore, that's, you know, open mic nights are the school of hard knocks of stand-up comics. And so I was lucky enough to be in Boston when a lot of cities right around that same time actually had this resurgence of, obviously, stand-up comedy has been around since we came out of the caves, but audiences had a renewed interest in that form, starting in the late 70s, in large part thanks to Robin Williams.
The first time you did a stand-up routine, Paula, what was it like? What was going through your mind?
It's funny, and I think most of my brethren would say that they had the same experience, which is the first time felt like it went really well, because they do this thing when they introduce you, or, you know, sort of part of the tradition of the whole thing, is that when an open micer is going up for their first time, you know, the MC will say, like, oh, you know, this is a person's first time on stage. Let's make them feel welcome. And the whole audience is kind of pulling for you. It's like as if the whole audience were your parents watching you in the school play. they really kind of are, and so it goes pretty well. And because people, you know, anytime you say something that people think is funny, they're like, wow, and that's their first time on stage. So there's this, you know, very, very supportive, fun feeling about it. However, the second time on stage, for some odd reason, nobody makes a big deal of it. Nobody goes, you know, they've only been on stage once before. Like, all of a sudden, the second time, you're supposed to be some sort of seasoned professional. So everybody I know, when we all sit around and share stories, every comic I know has a story of saying that the first time was great, and the second time, you know, was like, you know, crawling through the bowels of hell. And perhaps several times after, and you're always trying to return to that initial high. But it takes a really long time to work out that relationship with the audience.
You've been a guest on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me several times. How did you get involved with that program?
I get to be a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and really in the most boring of ways. They called me up and asked me. It was about 15 years ago.
Imagine that.
I'm sure they hate it when I say this, but I had never heard of the show. I was an NPR listener, but I listened to Morning Edition, mostly just news stuff, that sort of thing. So, they sent me a audio tape. This tells you how long ago it was. They sent me an audio cassette tape of the show so that I could know what it was. And I really didn't listen to it. I just left it on the island in the middle of my kitchen, and where junk piled up all the time. And one day I had a nanny that happened to glance at it on the island in the kitchen, and he said, "Oh, I love that show. You have to do that show." And so I did. It was really totally on the recommendation of my nanny. So if you can get a good nanny manager out there, really a good send off for the show business. And back when I first did the show, we were not in front of an audience.
Oh, so this had a different feel to it.
Together.
Yeah.
Say that again?
It had a different feel to it then.
Totally different feel. I mean, the audience is the magic. Except maybe if you're talking about Car Talk, where those guys enjoyed one another so much that it's fun to listen to them because you get like a contact high off of how much fun they were having with just one another and the caller. But they did a show, I guess, or maybe a couple of shows where they traveled to another city because Wait, Wait is usually done in Chicago, but they did a couple of shows where they traveled to another city and a sponsoring public radio station, would bring them out, and they did a few shows in front of audiences. And I think as soon as they had tasted that elixir, there was no going back, because it is a wholly different experience. You were just uplifted by the energy of the other people in the room. It's a hoot.
Now, I hear that you're a cat person, and the last count I heard is that you have 16 cats. Is that number still right?
Well, we're down one.
Okay.
We have 15 now.
Oh.
And I'm hoping to only go down from here on in. It is a tremendous amount of work, and there's no payload there. You know, that's the frustrating part. Last night I was clipping cat claws and brushing a couple of cats.
Isn't that fun?
Honestly. And both my daughter and I were bleeding by the end of it. And, and you go, wait a minute, there's nothing here that we can sell. there's nothing I can throw in the back of the truck and take to market. I feel like a really unprofitable farmer.
Well, do you plan to go looking for any more cats?
No, I'm actually hoping, I have to find out if the zoning here allows it, but I'm actually hoping to get some chickens.
Okay.
Partly because Buster Keaton did, but partly because my daughter is a vegan, and I have to say that although I haven't had the discipline to be a vegan, which for those who don't know is a plant-based diet. She's absolutely right. I mean, she's right for reasons of conscience, and she's right for health reasons. But the truth is, I love eggs. I'm thinking that, okay, if I could raise the chickens myself so that I knew that they were well cared for and that they weren't treated badly, then I could eat my eggs in peace. I mean, now I still eat the occasional egg, but I feel horrible about it. So I'm looking for a guilt-free way to eat eggs, and I think raising them myself, because I would really treat them well. I mean, beds and room service. I would really treat them well.
You could have your eggs and eat them too.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if Santa Monica is zoned for it. You know, what I should really do is get like a bigger animal, and then, you know, and then when my neighbors complain about that, then I bring the chickens in and go, well, okay, but see, there's a compromise. You know, like I should have a moose or an ostrich, maybe an ostrich.
I'm talking with comedian Paula Poundstone, who's going to be in Cincinnati on September 18th. How many tour dates do you do in a year?
I think 90 something, maybe this
wow.
year it will be. Yeah, yeah. My youngest is in an away from home program right now, and so I go out more than I used to. But when he's home, I do two, you know, on average two nights a week, and then there's the week where, you know, the occasional weeks where I'm not gone at all. But given that he's not home right now, I'm having to, two things. I'm having to pay for the away from home program that he's in, so I have to work. But B, there's no, you know, I can put some food and water down for the cats. They're fine. But they frown on that with children. while he's away, I'm all over the place.
What's it like to be on the road so much of the time, Paula?
Well, it's a very weird life because you go from being with tons of people to being incredibly alone. You know, this weekend I was staying at one point on Sunday night. I was staying at an airport hotel in Richmond, Virginia, and I take tap dance lessons, so I was out in the
really?
Hot sun in the parking lot practicing my tap dance sort of as far away from the building as I could get, but like on this, you know, huge blacktop. I thought, you know, if anybody's looking out their window right now, they've got to be like, well, that's a nutcase out there.
Is that Paula Poundstone out there dancing?
Yeah. I think, wait a minute. Is she doing the shim sham? She's not very good. Yeah, I'm working on my shim sham and my time step. It's very important to me. You know, the part of performing is indescribably delightful. It really is. And so all the other stuff that you kind of put up with to get there, you think it's a slog, and then you get on stage and you're like, it was all worth it. I suppose it's like when your kid graduates from college, I guess, you know. You're like, wow, geez, it was really hard, but look how cute she looks in that little hat.
Yeah, one of your hallmarks is never repeating the same show twice. How do you pull off coming up with new material all the time?
Well, my act is kind of like Willy Wonka's chocolate river, with the chocolate waterfall that churns the chocolate. My act changes inherently because I talk to the audience. And so whatever topic comes up in the conversation with an individual audience member, and I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? Generally speaking, that's where it starts. And wherever the conversation goes from there, you know, I have 36 years of material somewhere in my teeny beanie. And so wherever the conversation goes from there is really kind of dictated by who's in the crowd. And therefore, without any effort at all, the show is different night after night. I just, you know, the way my brain works, it's sadly riddled with obsessive compulsive disorder, and one of the ways it manifests itself in me is anything that gets said reminds me of yet one more thing that I feel the need to say. And so in most aspects of my life, that's a really annoying trait. I finally found a way on stage to, you know, just allow that to be that way, and it works great. It's a little bit like Dumbo's ears, you know. As his manager, Timothy Mouse, said to him, the very thing that brought you down is going to bring you up, up, up. And that's kind of how OCD works for me.
Hmm. Besides comedy, what are some of the other things that you've done in life?
Well, I bust tables for a living for a long time. I was a bicycle messenger for a while in San Francisco. And by the way, I've never been strong enough to ride a bike up a hill, and I'm too scared to ride it downhill. So I was never really all that good at that job, but I did it. I started as a stand-up when I was 19, so I haven't had a lot of, I waitressed here and there, but I haven't had like a lot of other job experiences. I mean, you know, I've had enough to make me, I think, a really good customer. I always feel like everybody should wait tables if they're going to eat out. They should know what it's like to bus and dishwash and wait tables. So I have that. I have that good background. But those really are the only real jobs I've ever done.
Yeah, what kinds of things do you like to do in your spare time?
Well,
if you have any spare time.
One of my favorite things in the world is to play ping pong. I don't get to play nearly often enough. But here at home, we at our peak, we were having about 5 or 6 ping pong parties a year in our backyard, where we chose names out of a hat for doubles matches. And I know you're wondering, so I'll tell you, yes, there were trophies involved. And not the kind where everyone gets one. Just
no, not a participation trophy.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, these were earned. These were earned trophies. And I have an antique scoreboard, the kind that might have been in a high school gym years ago, that you operate with a button, and it makes the light bulbs make the numbers change, and so no matter where you're standing at the party, you can see the score of the game that's happening. And I love to play ping pong, and I take drum lessons only because my son played for 10 years, and then he went into that, you know, horrible teenage phase where he just wouldn't do anything. And so I said to the drum teacher, just keep coming, I'll take the lesson, because I think he's going to move out of this phase eventually. So I'm taking drum lessons just to hold the slot. I didn't want to lose the drum teacher time, you know? If we lost 6 o'clock on Wednesday night, then we might never get it back again. So I'm a placeholder drummer.
And you've got your dancing.
And I got my tap dancing, yes, which I'm very bad at. I took swing dance, which is how I met the teacher that teaches me tap. And I originally started taking swing dance because I like the upbeat music, and I wanted to do something that involved human interaction, and I wanted to learn something new. And so swing dance seemed like a great candidate. I went to the group classes. I was so bad that I was holding the group back, really. It became a social burden. So then I took privately, and I was so bad at it that my teacher couldn't play the upbeat music because it was just too fast for me. So he played mostly the blues, and I can now do the Charleston to Fire and Rain. It looks more like Tai Chi when I do it, but yeah, I'm not a good dancer, but I do really enjoy it.
I take it there's no danger we'll ever see you on Dancing with the Stars then.
You know what? I have really tried hard to get on Dancing with the Stars. I don't think they want anything to do with me. I remember a few years back, the day that they released the names of the people that were going to be on that season, and who's that horrible woman? Nancy Grace was on the list, and somebody tweeted me or emailed me or something, a fan, and they said, oh, gee, I'm sorry to tell you, the list came out and you weren't on it. And they said, you know, Nancy Grace is on it. And I wrote back, I'm like, okay, now they're just rubbing my face in it. Because it's one thing not to have me. It's wholly another to have Nancy Grace instead. That's just cruel.
What would your advice be to somebody who a young person who says, I think I'd love to be a stand-up comic? What would you tell them?
Go to college first. I would tell them, develop some skills so that if you're not a stand-up comic, there's other opportunities available to you, and being a stand-up comic can wait a little while. And then once they're and you could even do open mic nights while you're in college, depending on where you live, or even at your college, depending on what school you go to. And then you go and you do open mic nights. And don't worry about getting paid. Don't worry about if you're the headliner or the middle act or the opener. Just go work on, learning to create that relationship with the audience and do what's in your own heart. I think one of the things that kind of is a sticking point, particularly for beginners sometimes, but is people don't allow themselves to, they're derivative sometimes. People want to be like somebody else. And I think the real joy of it is the part where, you're doing something that belongs only to you.
Paula, thank you for talking with us.
It was great talking with you. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure indeed. Comedian Paula Poundstone will perform at the Taft Theater on September 18th, and you can find information about the show on our website, wvxu.org.